Welcome to A Different Way of Traveling. This is a podcast where we discuss travel for persons with disabilities and special needs in South Africa and beyond with our host, Lois Strachan. Join us as we share inspiring stories of people who travel, exciting accessible travel experiences, and showcase service providers who will accommodate those with special needs. And now, on with the show.
Hi there, and welcome to today's episode of A Different Way of Traveling, a podcast on accessible travel brought to you by Accessible South Africa. I'm your host, Lois Strachan. Today, I'm talking with Normie Eckhart, who is an adventurer and traveler who uses his adventures to raise funds to benefit others. What I really found interesting about this conversation was in digging down into the details of how Normie has adapted some of his adventure activities to accommodate his disability. Right, let's learn a little bit more. Today on A Different Way of Traveling, we're talking with Normie Eckhart from Ventures for Jesus and Duo Active Mobility. Normie, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. How are you today?
Hi, Louise. Thank you so much for being here and for the opportunity to be on your program. I'm very well, thank you. I must just say I want to give all the glory for God for the interview and for setting up to chat with you and a little bit about traveling and all my adventures. And I'm so happy to actually to convey with your listeners and to tell them a little bit more about what I'm doing.
Well, it's great to have you with us. And maybe we can start. You know, I've had the opportunity of looking at your website and reading your bio, so I know a little bit of your story. But maybe you could just tell us a little bit of your story, just to introduce yourself and the work you do to the listeners.
Yes. So my name is Normie Eckhart. I live on a farm about 30 kilometers outside Brits on the Brits-Thabazimbi Road. It's to the north of South Africa. I'm the third generation living on a farm. I had the privilege of an able body for about 18 years of my life. And then I got into a motor car accident that left me an incomplete T7, T8 paraplegic. In the beginning, I must say, especially the first 4 years, it was for me very, very tough because I'm quite an active type of person. My personality luckily carried me through as well because I'm a very positive mindset type of person. I missed the sports a lot. I played rugby. Did athletics and everything. So, yeah, and the rugby especially, it was a very big dream of mine to become a professional rugby player. In primary school, I played 2 years Craven Week. Then in high school, I played 3 years for the Bulls side, and then 2 years for the SA and the 19 side, captaining all the sides. My high school as well, was head boy of the school, of the high school, head boy of the primary school, head boy of the hostel. So everything was going so well and so fine. And then in my matric year, towards the end, on 24 September 1997, I was in a motor car accident that left me a paraplegic. So for the first 4 years, and I was speaking to someone else the other day as well, that went through almost the same as me. And it looks like 4 years is about the bend of your body, to understand what's happening with you, and to really make plans and to get your mindset right to tackle life being in a wheelchair. So yeah, I've since then I had a sports school and adventure center, Orange Nest, where we did sport clinics, we did leadership development. It's like the old felt schools when we were in school. So I had that for about 18 years, and then I really felt that I wanted to do something more with my life. So I started in May. Actually, it started in January of 2018. It's surprising that every time when you go through life, something happens to you, and then you must react on that. And the best saying for me is life is 10% what happens to you and 90% how you react on that. So I found that each time when I made a step up in my life, something bad or something challenging happened to me. And that's the second thing that happened to me was in 2017. I went through a lot of stuff with the business because I'm an entrepreneur. I was very, very blessed that I've never in my life worked for a boss. So I'm always creating something. So I'm very, very fortunate and very lucky with that, with the business sense. But yeah, business was not doing very well. I was in a relationship, a long-term relationship that didn't work out end of that September. And so it was 2017. So 2018, beginning of 2018, I said, okay, now I want to do something with my life to make a difference in someone else's life. So yeah, in 2018, I started and I said, okay, now I want to do all the bucket list stuff that I always wanted to do. And I had like a long list. And, so I said, okay, so there's three things that I like to do in life. One is traveling. I like to do adventures and to push myself, and then to do outreaches and to make a difference in other people's lives. So the combination of that, was the birth of Ventures for Jesus. That is a non-profit company where I do, adventures, traveling, to raise funds to help some people. And the first project that I've done was in May of 2018. One of my friends, Quibus and Vernay Lombard, they were with me in matric, my matric year. And they had a little daughter, Sunay. She was 8 years old. And she was, she's a CP, cerebral palsy. And they were struggling to get the finances together to really make an impact in her life, bettering her life, because medical, costs and everything was so high. So I told them, okay, I want to do something for you guys. You will be my first project. And as there's actually a long testimony towards that point, but I'm gonna keep it short and just tell you about the adventure. So I said to them, I want to raise some funds for Sunay, for your fund, and I want to like jump out of a airplane. I want to do skydiving. And they said, okay, you're starting a little bit high. But okay, let's do this. And I spoke to a friend of mine, Andre, who's a skydiver, and he said, okay, but I'm living here in George now, and there's so much things that we can do. Why not do 7 of those adventures? And we call it 7 adventures in 7 days. So I said, okay, that sounds great for me. So we did 7 adventures in 7 days for Sunay. We raised about 110,000 rand for her fund. And while doing that, I got to travel to see the West Coast, the garden routes, the whole garden route. We did quad biking was the first one. The second one that we did was paragliding. Then we went zip lining. Number 4, we did scuba diving at Pletermark Bay. Then number 5, we did shark cage diving. Number 6, we went for the skydiving. And number 7, we went for deep sea fishing. So that was the first project, for Ventures for Jesus. And, it was so amazing because everything that I've done, from that point and since then, it's just like, I'm a very spiritual type of person. So it feels like God just promotes you and puts you on certain platforms to reach out to more people, to show them how to start living, to show them that they can still travel, they can still make an impact, even if you have your disability. So, yeah, that was actually great for me.
Now, I'm going to jump in here because you've said a lot in telling us those stories that my ears prick up, a little bit like my guide dogs, and I go, ooh, I want to find out a bit more. So, to what extent did you need to make physical adjustments to accommodate your disability in some of those activities? Like the skydiving, and obviously the quad biking, that one I can sort of see. I can understand how that would be.
Yeah.
But particularly the skydiving and things like that. To what degree did you need to make accommodations to make them work for you? And what accommodations did you
need? Yeah, I must say all of them, They were challenging, but let's say for instance the first one, the quad biking was still okay because I still have a lot of balancing. I can still balance a lot, so that wasn't too hard for me. But I needed some assistance to get onto the quad bike from my wheelchair. But from there, I have like a brachial plexus on my left hand, so my fingers are not working on the left hand. So there, I had like a strap that I made from Velcro to put on the steering of the bike, so that I can actually get hold of it. So that's one of the adjustments that I've made for the quad biking. Then the second one. We did a paragliding. The paragliding was a tandem, so I went with the instructor. So that was actually for me very nice. They had, however, put me like in a harness. So then there will be two guys that will pick my legs up while the instructor is standing on his legs and running towards the cliff. So and then just before the cliff they will leave and they will leave my legs and then they will actually go into the air. So and with the landing the same. You will use the wind to come in slowly, and as I get as we get closer to the ground, two guys will be there just to help and pick up the legs, and so that the instructor can be on his feet. Yeah. So the toughest one for me, physically and mentally, was definitely the zip lining, because with the zip lining you are 30 meters in the air, and you are going for a kilometer with a zip line, and there's 10 platforms. So each platform you have to hook off, and someone have to actually carry you and to hook on the other one. So that was quite challenging for me physically. And also when you start, you are on a high point. But when you end, you are at a very, very low point. So those guys must actually carry you for the whole kilometer uphill back to your chair. So yeah, that was quite tough for me.
With the zip lining, you didn't zip line tandem with somebody?
No. Okay. No. So that one I've done on my own. They just help you to hook you on and then hook you off again and hook you on the next one. But there will always be someone in front of you on the front platform just to stop you and to help you get on the platform again. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the lining. So, there.
Yeah. Then number four, we did the scuba diving. The scuba diving I've done in January. I've done a scuba course. And you wouldn't believe this, a big friend of mine, Uncle Leon, he's a blind diver. So I've done a trip with him to Mozambique where we went to dive that was actually very, very special for me because we are in the same waters, but we experience something totally different because I'm so weightless in the water that I can move and I can, it feels absolutely great for me. And for him, he can feel the water pressure. And they let him actually touch some of the coral and the stuff underneath. We have totally different experiences, but it's awesome, the diving.
I should probably interview Leon about that. You know, I know him. Yeah. He and I have connected on other matters. I've never actually thought about asking him to come and interview. Thank you for the suggestion. Okay.
Yeah,
From the scuba diving, where did you go next?
From the scuba diving, it was number four, and then number five, we've done the shark cage dive. So the shark cage diving was great because one of the instructors at Mossel Bay, we've done it at White Shark Africa. They are in Mossel Bay, so. One of the instructors there, his father is actually in a wheelchair. So that helped a lot because he knew exactly what to do with a wheelchair. So there it was just a question of getting me on the boat. I just sat in my wheelchair, so they just lifted me up, put me on the boat, and then we went to Robben Island. That is close there in the bay. So then they helped me from my chair to get the wetsuit on first, and then from my chair they lifted me up and helped me inside the cage. And again, if you are inside the water, you are weightless. So then it's actually so nice. You are about just above your waist. I would say. Just here at your breast, you are in the water, and then you get like your goggles, and then so your face will be outside the water, but inside the cage, and then they will have like a fish head, a tuna head or something that they will attract the sharks. And then they will tell you, okay, in a few seconds, now you can go underwater. So then you go underwater, you have your goggles on, and then you can actually see them close by the cage. That was an awesome experience.
I've heard a number of stories of the sharks actually coming up and almost beating against the cage. Did you have that experience? Yeah. And to what extent then does that impact on you inside the cage?
Yeah. So you, if you are inside the cage, there's a railing that you can hold onto. But the railing is inside that you can hold onto, and it's about 30 centimeters from the outside panel of the cage. So we had a few experiences of those that the sharks actually comes so close that they either hit with their snouts or with their tails. They actually hit the cage. So it is so close. But luckily you are safe, because you have these handlebars to hold on to. You are weightless, number two. And, even if they bump, this cage, this cage is sort of fixed, in a certain way to the boat. So, it doesn't float away from the boat, at any stage.
Okay. Wow. Great. Okay, so that's the shark diving.
Yeah. So then we did the skydiving. And the skydiving, I think this is the one that I was most scared of. Because even though I'm okay with heights, jumping out of a plane at 10,000 feet, it is terrifying.
I think it's not so much the thought of jumping out of the plane, it's the thought of what happens on the other end once you get down to the ground. That's the scary bit for me.
For sure, because my mother actually, she was so worried about this one, because the week before, there was an interview on television with some of the guys that also that was in wheelchairs that went skydiving, and one of the guys, they broke their legs because they couldn't pick up their legs in the landing. So my mother was so terrified about this one, and but I knew if the Lord wanted me to do all these challenges, to do something good in someone else's life, He will actually protect me as well. So we had a crash course just before, for about half an hour, 45 minutes, and they tell you exactly what position your body must be in, how you must. There's luckily in you have almost like a suit that you are in, with handles on your close to your knees, so you can actually put your hands in that handles and pick your legs up so that you don't fall on your legs when you come down. So that actually gave me some peace of mind. And then we went in a plane, went up 10,000 feet, and when we reached 10,000 feet, the door went open, and that first 5,000 feet, you are falling at about between 15 and 20 seconds for you to reach 5,000 feet. And then when they open the parachute, then you have about 12 to 15 minutes after that for the rest of the 5,000 feet until you reach the ground. But what is so special about that is the scenery when you jump. It is so special to see Mossel Bay, where we jumped, the whole ocean, and then the all the houses and the land and everything. It looks like a road map from the top, and then you are above the clouds. So for that first few thousand feet, when you fall, you can actually see a shadow of the two guys, because I did it in tandem as well. So you see the two guys hanging in the cloud, like the shape, and with a like a rainbow, a round rainbow around you two guys, and then poof, you go through the clouds. So that was so awesome.
tell me about the landing, because this one, you've mentioned the theory behind it, but
those last
few moments as you approached, how did you feel?
I must say, when the door opened, it was excitement, because I knew there's no turning back now. And when I actually fell for those 15 to 20 seconds, that was awesome, because it's a major, major rush. And then when the parachute opens and you have that 12 to 15 minutes to take in everything, that is like a treasure moment for you. And then when you approach the landing, then you start to stress a little bit about the landing. And luckily, the instructor also, he said to me, I will take you, but the wind must be blowing like almost flat. Because the more wind there is, the better he can actually guide and bring you softer for a grounding. So luckily the wind picked up, and he could guide us great to the ground. And then just before we hit the ground, he told me, okay, now you can pick up your legs. So I put my hands into these loops, and I picked up my legs. He was trying to stand, and then he slided underneath me as well. So if I had to fall, I could fall on top of him. So he will take some of the impact. Luckily that was, but when I landed, that was the most wonderful thing I've done in my life. That was so great.
It must have been an extraordinary experience, because it's, if you think about it without doing any of the research into the logistics of how it's possible, is it possible, and things like that, it sounds a fairly daunting experience. But
you know,
to understand that there are ways and means that can really mean that we can do so much more than people give us credit for. But so often, but sometimes we even think. So, wow.
Yeah, definitely. So, that's one of my aims with Ventures for Jesus, and doing all the other adventures and stuff that I'm sure we're going to get to now as well. But the one of the main reasons for me, there's about four or five points for me, and one of them is to inspire people, not only without disabilities, to show them what they can do, but the guys with disabilities, to tell them and to show them that there's so much more to live for, and there's so much more that you can do, and so many people don't give us any credit, and don't think that we can do it, but you must just try, and you must just go out there, and you must just do it.
I've come across this so often in talking to people with disabilities, that often the greatest barrier are the people around them who are anxious on their behalf. And who think they're protecting us by saying, don't do that, you might hurt yourself. When in fact, we're not the ones who are stopping ourselves. The barriers are probably more to do with other people and their misperceptions of what is possible.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's fascinating to hear just a few of those experiences. I want to shift slightly into a different area, and that is, if I'm correct, you do adventure camps for youngsters with disabilities to follow up on teaching others this type of skill and to give them other experiences. Can we chat a bit about those?
Yeah, so I had the Sports School and Adventure Center where I've done like this the sport teaching and the leadership and so on as well. I don't do that anymore, but with Ventures for Jesus, I go out to schools and to churches and to companies and to do motivational speaking about about disability, but about life, and to teach to show people and to teach them throughout the adventures that I do that there's still so much that you can do as a person. So there's a lot of those schools that I go to, that I show all these adventures, and I have like slides and presentations that I show them what I'm actually doing. But the most important thing for me is to make a difference in someone's life. So the one of my next adventures that I want to do is to do 7 adventures for 7 kids in 7 different provinces. So I will go to one province, do adventure with that kid, or just on my own, and get some funds to help them. Maybe they need like a wheelchair, or they need some funds for medical costs, or just something to better their lives. So that's what I really want to do if this virus actually get a move on someday.
Well, that sounds like a really wonderful plan to be working towards. And, you know, maybe you and I should chat offline, because I can connect you up with some people down here in the Western Cape who might be able to partner with you on that project. But we'll chat about that offline. So looking more generally at the kind of the adventure market, the hospitality industry, tourism and that type of thing, what would you say are the greatest challenges that people face as travelers with disabilities in just getting out and engaging our love of travel?
I think the accessibility is one of the biggest challenges. The one adventure that we did 2019 was going from Lüderitz in Namibia to Cape Agulhas, and it was about between 1,500 and 1,700 kilometers, and we've done it in 45 days, and I was on a hand cycle doing about 40 to 50 kilometers a day.
Oh.
So one of the biggest challenges for me on that whole trip was the accessibility for people in wheelchairs is like non-existent. And the other thing is that people they must be educated about this, because they will make like let's say for instance a ramp. They will make a ramp, and they will do something that they think will be okay, but it's not, because they didn't get someone in a chair actually to say, you know what, come and test this for me. Tell me what you need. Tell me how many space you want. There was actually just one guy in some Somerset base. This guy went, he created a wheelchair room, but he sat in a wheelchair going through the room, seeing where he can reach, what he can do. If he's on the bed and he forgot the light, he made a light switch this side with a two-way. In the bathroom, for instance, when he gets into the bathroom, the light will go on with a sensor. The door will shift instead of swing open. So that was the one guy in 45 days on the road that I actually appreciated so much, because he took the time to put himself in that position to build something. And not a lot of people do that, unfortunately.
So essentially what you're saying is that, I mean, that sounds like quite an epic journey from Lüderitz down to Cape Agulhas. But it doesn't sound like it was the cycling on the hand cycle, because that obviously puts a lot of pressure on your hands and blisters and physical discomfort and things like that. But that sounds like that wasn't the greatest difficulty or the greatest challenge. The challenge was the places you were staying overnight.
For sure, for sure. You must remember, remember if you are between 40 and 50 kilometers on the road each single day from, let's say, 8 o'clock to 6 o'clock at night, you are so tired, you just need a good night's rest and you need to shower. Now, some of those places, we actually needed to take off the door for me to just get in with a chair. We needed to remove some of the shower doors so that I can get close enough so that we can put like a plastic chair in so that I can shower. So yeah, for sure that was mentally the road was for me okay. It was tough, especially the uphills, and to prepare yourself mentally to do in 45 days, every day, the same thing over and over again. But if I look at the whole adventure, the biggest challenge for me was the places where we stayed, the accommodation, and the accessibility to even go to the toilet, to get to a toilet. That was a big challenge. And I think that weighed on my mind a lot. And that made the whole adventure for me more difficult than it was supposed to be.
Yeah. You arrive at an accommodation, you are physically and mentally exhausted, and now you have to go through the problem solving of how do I make this work for me? And yes. It's just yes. One next thing on top of that. And realistically, making a temporary solution to an accessibility issue isn't always going to be as easy, as comfortable, or as accessible. So quite yes. An undertaking. Wow, that must have been yeah. Quite something. And full kudos to you. How did you plan that trip, though? Just in terms of investigating that sort of thing ahead of time.
Yeah. The year before, we did a trip, an adventure where we went from Pretoria to Lüderitz. So I was doing most of the driving, and a friend of mine, Eric, that they call his nickname is Spinnekop, because he wanted to, look, our overall project was to create awareness for the ODF, Organ Donor Foundation in South Africa. And while we were doing this, Eric was wearing a Spider-Man spandex suit, and and he was running a marathon a day, and I was doing some of the driving, the backup. And then I did a project for Ventures for Jesus as well, doing 100 miles for Jesus, where I took my rugby wheelchair and I did about 5Ks a day. So that was our first adventure. And with our first adventure, the planning that went into it was a little bit, even though we didn't plan any accommodation whatsoever. We are on the road. Because I took like a trailer with us. So this trailer had sleeping like beds in. It had like a kitchen in. So in that regard, we were sorted, and we planned quite well for that one. But even though we had this trailer, we only slept in the trailer maybe 5 times in 43 days. Because the people on the road are so excited to see you, and they can see the difference that you are making in people's lives, that they want you to stay with them, and to come and stay at their guest houses or stay in them with them at home. So we only used it for about 5 nights, but that was for me nice because. You are almost off feeling secure in this whole trailer because you created everything. you know exactly how it works, and you are more comfortable with that. The second one that we did, where I did the went with a hand cycle, we didn't really have a trailer that we can use for that, setting up tents and everything. And I think that was a little bit more challenging. But the things that we planned for was things like if you are in Namibia, if you go, let's say for instance, between Aus and Lüderitz, it's about 160 kilometers of nothingness. There's absolutely nothing. So there's no shops, there's no toilet, there's no nothing. And for that 160 kilometers is straight as an arrow. If you chase your wife away, you will see her for 3 days walking still. So it is like, it's like dead straight. So you must make other plans. So there, we had like a commode that we took with us. We had like water bottles and, for an outside shower and so on. So there was a little bit of planning, going into that. Yeah.
I'm curious to find out the people who you stayed with on those trips. Did you find that the fact that you stayed with them made them more aware? And as a result of that, were they willing to look at sort of more formal adjustments to their facilities to make them more accessible?
No, definitely, definitely. If I take for example the first trip with the Seven Adventures, it was in Naisna. When we finished there, I needed to loo, and there was no facilities for me. So, the owner took me to one of the ablution blocks and she said, okay, I want to actually cater for you because, I want, more people with disabilities coming to Naisna as well. So how can you help me to set up this bathroom? So I've helped her with a bathroom, and what was so nice for me, about 3 weeks after that, when I came home, she emailed me pictures of the bathroom totally accessible for people in chairs and with a disability. So that already is for me, it gives me a warm heart to know that even if I'm on the road and I'm doing this stuff and meeting with people and getting them actually to see how things work, I'm making it easier for the guys coming after me, because then we can speak to people and they are more than willing to listen. Most people are so warm and welcoming and willing to make a change, they just don't have the info. And I think if more people can speak up instead of keeping quiet, because I'm thinking of the fishing, for example. I'm doing for Gauteng North, I'm fishing in the SA Championship, and with a rugby, I've done rugby wheelchair for Northwest as well in the SAs. And on the functions, there will be like steps and there's no toilet and, but it's a disabled tournament. And everyone sits there with their mouth full of teeth and they don't speak about anything. And everyone that's organizing is thinking that this is the best thing ever, until I'm starting to speak up. And I tell them, okay, you want me to get into the hall? I don't have my ramps here, so how do you suppose I get into here? Oh, we didn't think about that.
Or up onto a stage, or...
Yeah, yeah. Mm. So that was the first year's essays. The second year's essays, we got the guys that organized got a place that was like flat. There's no steps. There was actually a wheelchair toilet, everything. But it happened because I spoke up about it. And I think a lot of people with disabilities are guilty of this, of not speaking out and not actually speaking to people and telling them what your needs are. Because they most of those people don't know your needs because they are not in that position. So you must actually speak up. You must speak up and you must tell and try and educate people and try and help them to better the facilities and better the lives for people coming afterwards.
I think communication and the need for communication is so important. And I think also the ability to ask for help when it's needed. I think those are things that we do struggle with. Norman, I want to ask if people want to find out more, if they want to support some of the work that you're doing, how can they find you? How can they contact you?
They can go to Ventures for Jesus' website. It's www.ventures and then the number 4Jesus .org.za. And then Ventures for Jesus has got a Facebook page as well. And then I have a company that sells and help people with wheelchairs as well. And that is Dioactive Mobility. And you can find that Dioactive Mobility at www.dioactivemobility.co.za. Or they can just go to my Facebook page, Normie Eckhart, or Instagram, Normie Eckhart, and they will find me there as well.
That's great. Thank you. And we will link to those in the podcast show notes as well. As a final question, I was skimming through your Facebook profile, and I saw one of your recent posts mentioned something about a trip that you're hoping to take to Belgium in November this year. Do you want to tell us very quickly about that particular trip that you're wanting to take?
Yeah, so I love sports. So I've done the rugby wheelchair. I've done the fishing. And then I started to playing darts. So in 2019, September, I went to the SAs for disabled darts, the SADA championship. And there I was picked to go for the SA team to represent South Africa at the World Cup. It was supposed to be this year in end of April, beginning March. But due to COVID, they cancelled or they had it later in the year, I think September round or so. But we as a team decided that there's another world trophy that's been held in Belgium in November. So we will be representing South Africa as a darts team. A darts team will consist of two people in a wheelchair and two standing disabled people with maybe like an amputee. So that's the four people, and we have two of those teams, and then we have a coach and a manager. So we are 10 people trying to get the funds together because it's quite expensive. And you know, like with any disabled sports, there's no funding from government. So we actually have to do fundraising and sell tickets and do anything that we can just to get the funds together to go to Belgium. But I'm so very excited about this. This will be my second country overseas. I've been in Namibia. I've been in Botswana for fishing. I've been in Zimbabwe and I've been diving in Mozambique. And I've been to China on business. But this will be my first trip to Europe, and I'm super super excited about that.
Well, that sounds exciting. And if anyone would like to try and support that initiative, and support the team, how can they find out more information about that?
Yeah, that will be awesome if they can. We have a letter from our coaches and from the management from the SADA side, the South African team, so they can get hold of me on my Facebook page, Normie Eckhart. We can put them, if there's any big companies out there who wants to sponsor our team, then I can put you in contact with our manager, and he can actually tell you how you can get involved with our team, sponsoring maybe something, because we have a breakdown of everything. We have a breakdown of the flights. We have a breakdown of hotel accommodation. So if anyone wants to get involved in one of those aspects, sponsoring the team, even if it's like maybe clothes or something, I would appreciate it so, so much. And they can get all of me on my Facebook page, yes.
That's great. Well, hopefully we will put the word out and see how we can support the team.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for chatting to us on A Different Way of Traveling today. It's been really fascinating listening to some of the experiences you've had, some of the adventures that you've done, and all in a good cause. So thank you so much. It's been really great to chat to you.
Huge thanks to Normie Eckhart for being willing to go into more detail about how he adapts with the adventures he took to make them more accessible. I found that a fascinating interview. Our travel quote for this episode comes from the ancient Roman philosopher Seneca, who said, "Travel and change of place imparts new vigor to the mind." That's it from me, your host Lois Stratton, and all I can say is thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
That's it from us for this time. You can find Accessible South Africa on the web at accessiblesouthafrica.co.za, on Facebook and Instagram at Accessible South Africa, and on Twitter at Accessible SA. You can also email us at podcast@accessiblesouthafrica.co.za. Editing by Craig Strachan, using Hinderberg software. Our theme music is by Lu Chil Chow, based on a motif by Lord Strachan. Credits read by Musa Izulu. Thank you for joining us on A Different Way of Traveling. We'll see you next time. Until then, happy travels.